We are jumping ahead to the end of chapter 4, and next week, beginning chapter 5. For context, I'm going to read the titles of the 9 previous propositions. We're going to be reading the 10th one, but just so you have the context, I'm going to give the first 9, just the titles. One question I have, not having read this chapter, is by the word impossible, because he's saying that property is impossible for this reason, for that reason, 10 reasons. By impossible, does he mean unjustifiable on any grounds? If so, then what he's proving, as he said, is that property not only possesses no social utility, but far worse, it leads, as Polanyi said, to the dissolution of society, which we can see is so when we look around us with conscious eyes and minds. That is to say, with reclaimed bodies and therefore selves, and recognize that anything that still contains a modicum of health, the earth and its species, ourselves and societies, does so as an act of defiance and constant struggle to exist. When what we need is a world that supports it. Now, given that Proudhon wrote this almost 200 years ago, which means the power guys have long since studied it, perceived the threat it poses to the official raison d'etre, i.e. to further progress, quote-unquote, we cannot but accept, as we synthesize and advance Proudhon's gift, that the result we see around us is the intention. That while property serves no social purpose, it does serve an antisocial one. What the power guys have in mind is complete consumption, privatization of the earth, and the dissolution of us. First proposition, property is impossible because it demands something for nothing. Second proposition, property is impossible because wherever it exists, production costs more than it is worth. Third proposition, property is impossible because with a given capital, production is proportional to labor, not to property. Fourth proposition, property is impossible because it is homicide. Fifth proposition, property is impossible because if it exists, society devours itself. Sixth proposition, property is impossible because it is the mother of tyranny. Seventh proposition, property is impossible because in consuming its receipts, it loses them. In hoarding them, it nullifies them. And in using them as capital, it turns them against production. Eighth proposition, property is impossible because its power of accumulation is infinite and is exercised only over finite quantities. Ninth proposition, property is impossible because it is powerless against property. And looking forward to when we go into those in more detail, but we are moving to the 10th proposition, which we will read in full. Property is impossible because it is the negation of equality. And he explains this in these words. The development of this proposition will be the resume of the preceding ones. One, it is a principle of economical justice. And I ask, does he mean efficiency, balance, equivalency in exchanges? It is a principle of economical justice that products are bought, exchanged with, only by products. Property being capable of defense only on the ground that it produces utility is, since it produces nothing, forever condemned. Two, it is an economical law that labor must be balanced by product. It is a fact that with property, production costs more than it is worth. Three, another economical law, the capital being given Production is measured not by the amount of capital, but by productive capacity. Property requiring income to be always proportional to capital without regard to labor does not recognize this relation of equality between effect and cause. 4 and 5. Like the insect which spins its silk, the laborer never produces for himself alone. Property demanding a double product and unable to obtain it robs the laborer and kills him. 6. Nature has given to every man but one mind, one heart, one will. Property, granting to one individual a plurality of votes, supposes him to have a plurality of minds. 7. All consumption which is not reproductive of utility is destruction. Property, whether it consumes or hoards or capitalizes, is productive of inutility, the cause of sterility and death. 8. The satisfaction of a natural right gives rise to an equation. In other words, the right to a thing is necessarily balanced by the possession of the thing. Thus, between the right to liberty and the condition of a free man, there is a balance, an equation. Between the right to be a father and paternity, an equation. Between the right to security and the social guarantee, an equation. But between the right of increase and the receipt of this increase, there is never an equation. For every new increase carries with it the right to another, the latter to a third, and so on forever. Property, never being able to accomplish its object, is a right against nature and against reason. And my comment, in framing acquisitiveness this way, as an artificial insertion into our relation with our earth, what he also exposes is a substitution that is a theft of an external will for our own, i.e. a sabotaging of our inherent freedom by a third-party intermediary placing itself between us and the realization of our own wishes in order to take that which is ours and lay false claim to it, i.e. he is identifying, describing, trying to help us see the conception, birth of property in a fundamental deceit. So when he calls property an effect without a cause, he means without an honest cause, that its existence is hidden in, he would say, hidden in lies we tell ourselves or misconceptions, but which I would call an ever-seekingness, which is the opposite of following our questions, which I discussed in Waking Up. And Alice Miller would call a compulsion, utterly irrational, and rooted in the childhood experience and practice of abandonment. But what I'm finding is, Alice is a reverberation that never ends. And I'm understanding her better the longer she sits. Hidden power is actually hidden compulsion. They hide from us. They hide from themselves the rage they fear that consumes them. Is it clear that Proudhon has no rage to exorcise, to integrate into his personality? Eric Fromm would say he got both the honey and the milk, i.e., someone bounced this child on their knee and kissed his cheek while he laughed. And I've gone over, wanted to share that. Thank you for your patience. I love you. Miss you. Want to see you. So keep yourself strong. well and well. And until next week, peace.